Welcome back to Exploring Boys Education, a regular podcast produced by IBSC for leaders and educators in boys' schools around the world. I'm Bruce Collins, IBSC's Director of Membership Engagement. In this two-part episode, we explore the teacher-boy connection through the lens of the IBSC Relational Learning Special Interest Group. But before we begin, let's hear again from IBSC Executive Director Tom Batty as he joins me for the IBSC Newsreel.
Thank you, Bruce, and welcome, everyone. The first time I went into a classroom on the other side of the desk, our lecturer gave us a pad of paper and told us to write down every interaction we observed. By the end of 40 minutes, I had covered reams with ink. It was a powerful early insight into the most important school lesson, that ours is a relational craft. That boys are relational learners and schools are relational communities of learning has been and remains central to IBSC programming and research and our advocacy for boys' education. In the words of Michael Reichert, you've got to reach them before you can teach them. And the ultimate responsibility lies with the teacher. This two-part episode explores the crucial role of teacher-student relationships in boys' education, based on the work of the IBSC Relational Learning Special Interest Group. Our guests, Peter Kutis and Sandra Boys, are long-time IBSC contributors and supporters. Sandra is Executive Director of Professional Learning and Research at Crescent School in Canada, while Peter holds the role of Deputy Headmaster at Hales School in Australia. They both serve as coordinators of IBSC's Relational Learning Special Interest Group. Peter and Sandra discuss the significance of relational learning, its impact on boys' engagement and learning, and practical strategies for educators to build strong relationships. They also explore challenges and considerations in fostering these connections and how school culture can nurture them. Before handing over to Bruce, Peter and Sandra, some upcoming IBSC program highlights to stir your interest. Looking ahead to your 2025 diary, our free to members IBSC Insights virtual event takes place on February the 12th. And I hope you'll be able to join me in considering current issues facing boys, boys' education and boys' schools. Registration for the South African Regional Conference in March is now open, and it is a very special gathering. If possible, I strongly encourage you to join us at St Albans College in Pretoria. And I give early notice to register for the 2025 IBSC Annual Conference at Belmont Hill School. Registration is now live and information is available online. Should you be planning to submit a workshop proposal, the deadline is December the 13th, 2024. We will continue to share PD opportunities on the website, so please keep checking in. And now it's over to Bruce, Sandra and Peter.
One of the real joys of IBSC, I always say, is that we have the privilege of connecting with talented and knowledgeable people, people who are passionate about the education of boys. And as Tom mentioned in the newsreel, I'm with Sandra Boys and Peter Kutis for this episode, who are the hosts of the IBSC Special Interest Group on Relational Learning. It's wonderful to have you both here, Sandy and Peter. And I wonder if we could start with you, Sandy. I'd love for both you and Peter to introduce yourselves and what you do at your respective schools.
Well, thank you, Bruce. And it really is a pleasure to be here with both of you to talk about boys' education and relational learning, when something that's very close to my heart here at Crescent School. So Crescent is an all-boys day school in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Our mission statement is men of character from boys of promise. And we start at students that are 8 years old and go all the way through to graduation. Right now, we are in the middle of a huge build and a new strategic plan, but I can certainly say that relational learning is at the heart of what we do, and it's a real thrill to be able to talk about that with you both today. I'm the Executive Director of Professional Learning and Research. So in that role, I am the Executive Director of the Crescent Center for Boys Education, which is our bespoke research center in the school. And we love to partner with other schools that also have research centers and ensure that the work that we do is available to anyone interested in the education of boys on our website throughout the world. So that's one of my big passions. And it's really exciting to be given the opportunity to do that work.
Yeah, wonderful opportunity. What about you, Peter?
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. I'm over at Hale School in Perth in beautiful Western Australia on the coast of the Indian Ocean. What a great place to live and work. Hale School is an all-boys pre-primary to year 12 school. We've got about 1,600 boys in our care, and I'm deputy headmaster there. And of course, long-time admirer and I'd like to say contributor to the great work of the IBSC, and very interested, you know, as you know and as we'll discuss, in the whole relational learning piece and its importance in boys' schools.
Well, thanks for that. It's, as I said, great to have you both on. The Relational Learning Special Interest Group is kind of like a pioneer SIG in the IBSC as well. It, you know, started and some other special interest groups have now birthed sort of based on the work that this special interest group has done. But I'd like to start by asking what inspired the creation of the IBSC Relational Learning Special Interest Group, and what specific needs and challenges was it aiming to address within boys' education on a global scale?
I'll start there, Bruce. Thank you. Look, I think the origins go back about 10 years. To discussions between Crescent School, where Sandy works, Scotch College in Melbourne, where I was at the time, and Michael Reichert, who you know, along with Richard Hawley, conducted that original global research study for the IBSC on boys as relational learners. So we had a sense then that there was an interest among IBSC schools in developing models of practice, sharing ideas on how best to operationalise the key findings of the research, and that's a really important thing for any research, particularly in busy schools. And the way we like to frame it in the interest group is, how do we make relational learning visible to boys, practical for teachers, and sustainable for schools? So that was the spark, the kernel of it. And then in 2019 at the conference at Selwyn House in Montreal, our little group there ran a workshop. And we outlined, you know, the key findings of the research, brought that back to the front of mind for people, and essentially put out a call for a coalition of the willing to join the cause. And that was, you know, the birth of the special interest group.
That's exactly right, Peter. And, you know, ever since Reaching Boys, Teaching Boys came out, I think there was this aha moment within the IBSC and those dedicated to educating and the work and working with boys, and said, that's it. We've got something here. We need to do something with this really important piece of work. And I think that it really deeply impacted our communities and how we have since then dedicated ourselves to working with the boys in our care. The challenge, though, is how to keep those conversations rich and alive, as you said, in our school culture with hectic schedules and pace of school life. And having a SIG dedicated to this particular topic really allowed conversations to go and live beyond those spark moments at conferences. When you read the book, when you have the opportunity to hear Dr. Reichert speak at a conference, you come away with all of this energy, and then it's so easy for that to dissipate, not for lack of great intentions, but for lack of a structure and how to really embed it in your schools. And so with that, with a SIG, we can take those theoretical aspects of the work and then share wigs with like-minded colleagues through the conversations and meetings we have, thank goodness for Zoom calls. And not only we get to meet people and see people interested in that work, but we get to see them across divisions. So junior school, middle school, senior school. So it's really been the structure of the SIG has actually supported the relational work of the colleagues dedicated to doing that work in the schools.
It sounds like a wonderful opportunity to connect and share. And I would have loved to be a fly on the wall in some of your conversations and sessions together. The one term that I think a lot of people in IBSC circles hear often is that boys learn their teachers before their subjects. And I think it's a term that also resonates with many educators of boys. I'm wondering, in your experience, as both of you have been involved in this work and part of the SIG, how does the quality of the teacher-student relationship impact the boys' engagement and learning, even beyond the classroom?
Look, I think you've captured the essence of it right there. Boys do learn their teachers before their subjects. In a nutshell, that's it for me. For boys, the quality of that relationship they have with each teacher is the most important factor in determining their outcomes. More important, I'd say, than the quality of the curriculum, the quality of the teacher delivery, all of which are important, of course, and also more important than which school the boy attends. Ultimately, when boys know that we are interested in them as individuals, that we care about them as people and as learners, and we'll get into that a little bit more later on, and that we are willing as teachers to share our own interests, passions, and stories with them, then they want to learn, they want to give their best, and they really want to work for us in and out of the classroom to achieve their best. I'd also say there that one of the things boys are learning about us as teachers, apart from our interests and in my case and others' obvious quirks, is our situational awareness. It's that degree to which we as teachers are good at noticing. And what I mean by that is that boys are very attuned to our ability to notice whether what we're doing, how we're teaching, is breaking through. Is it reaching them? Is it teaching them? And then they're looking at our willingness to change things up when we see that our approaches are not quite working. That's really important for boys. And then probably finally on this point for now, I'd say relationships beyond the classroom are really worth our attention. One of the best ways for teachers to share their talents and interests with boys and to let boys learn them, so to speak, in a different realm, is through those co-curricular activities. I've previously been involved in some school-based action research which showed that relationships we form with boys when we serve as coach or co-curricular leader transfer into the classroom environment also. So boys actually told us, this was their word, that they're more invested in academic classes that were taught by teachers who they worked with outside the classroom, be that in sports or the arts or whatever else it might be.
Peter, I completely agree with you. And, you know, we tend to think that the teacher-student relationship comes first and then the coach-student relationship comes second. But it's so often that you'll have students choose your class or come to your class because they experienced you as a coach or a director or something at another part earlier in their learning journey. And the other thing that I think that's interesting about that is that boys who have experienced a teacher as a coach really can help set the tone for other boys in that learning environment in the classroom. No, it's going to be fine. I know when it's good. And there's this sort of energy that happens when somebody says, look, this guy's okay. This is good. Or this teacher is going to be fine. Don't you worry. And then there's that trust, peer trust, that actually extends to the classroom. If you work with boys, particularly in a school that starts with the younger years, we forget how vulnerable boys are. And I really think this is a key point for those who work with boys, that they really do need to feel that trust. They are emotional, especially as young ones. And they're emotional all the way through. What they choose to reveal to us as adults really depends on that trusted teacher-student relationship component. Because we hold that responsibility, that authority, we can't forget that we have to earn their trust along the way. So it's a huge jump for our boys to take us as we are and then trust us along the way. We need to understand that they're coming into it with a great deal of vulnerability, and they need to understand that we're there to support them truly at every step of that journey.
Such great insights. What I love about schools is they aren't these sort of static places where you can predict everything. You know, every day is different. Every moment could be hijacked by something or some crisis that needs to be averted, because you're working with people. And along those lines, I want to ask, as we talk about relationships, which are complex things, as it is, but particularly I think between teachers and students can be complex. So what are some of the unique challenges or considerations you think that educators of boys might keep in mind as they think about what it means to build relationship with boys?
Before I get onto that one, Bruce, you've just made me think of something else. Your last comment there, you know, someone once said to me that, you know, boys are only ever 10 minutes away from disappointing us. And that's what keeps things interesting and exciting in schools. But I also think they're probably only 5 minutes away from delighting us as well, you know. And so it's that connection, it's that charge that comes from, you know, watching boys grow, develop, make mistakes, learn from that, and at the same time keeping us on our toes, which makes it all just so invigorating. In terms of the challenges and the considerations, there's a couple there that I'd draw out initially. We've talked about the fact that boys need to have a positive relationship with their teacher before they are willing to give their best to the business of learning, and that is entirely true. The challenges that then flow from that are numerous, and it's important that we talk about some of those. One key challenge for me and a frequent question from teachers is, how do I build and maintain quality relationships with every boy in my care, especially when, for some teachers, what that means is teaching upwards of 100 boys in a given year, or more in some schools. So a concept that I find helpful there is just this notion of triage, to be thinking actively about the immediate and the particular needs of each boy in our care, but accepting that we can't meet all of those needs simultaneously. So rather than that overwhelming sense of, well, how do I have significant relational supportive exchanges with each boy each day, which can be overwhelming, sometimes it helps to think about the three or four boys in each class who, you know, we intuit on any given day need some special attention. And if we do that bit well, and understanding that those three or four boys will generally change over time according to the challenges that they're facing, then the task just seems that little bit more manageable. And then, look, another one I'd point out at this stage is that it can be a challenge because, look, we're all human. To resist that natural inclination to personalise oppositional behaviour. And that was a strong feature of the original IBSC research, which identified our ability as teachers to, in their words, accommodate a measure of opposition as a key relational gesture. And the way I like to think about that one is through the idea that what we do is we respond to need rather than norm. To understand the importance of seeing occasional oppositional behaviour as an opportunity to better understand a boy, to open a window there to better seeing what his circumstances are. And then in certain situations, we make strategic exceptions and we might choose to overlook a boy's performance or conduct, that we might not otherwise tolerate. And if we get that right, we can help a boy see that he is known and valued. And that is just so important. And just as importantly, that he matters more to us than any general rule. And obviously, the caveat there is, you know, not all oppositional conduct can or should be accommodated, but developing that sense through knowing boys well of when a boy's need for emotional room and comfort trumps the value of holding him to standard expectations helps us to expedite our relationship with him, but not just that. The other boys in the class who observe our actions, boys are always watching and they're highly attuned to how we conduct ourselves and the way that we work with other boys in the class.
And I think it's so important when we are accommodating those moments of opposition that we have a moment to sort of check ourselves and realize that sometimes that the situations need to be put into context, which I think we do well in boys' schools, but it's always good to remind ourselves of that. Like, what has happened in that student's life, that boy's life, that may be causing this behavior, this choice, this conduct? What is the bigger picture? And we can't apply rules generically to what are very particular situation-specific responses. So I think that we at boys' schools understand there's always a context and you need to understand the entire story before We go in with sort of whatever rule moment of opposition is actually in process. And I think that's really, that's an important piece. I think I'd add that, the first year of a teacher in an all boys school, and in any school actually, but in an all boys school certainly brings with it its challenges. And I know the IBSC has a wonderful course to support teachers new to boys schools, which I highly, highly recommend. And all new teachers to Crescent School take that course. But boys are naturally curious, and they're curious about the new role models in their lives. And in order to find out about them, sometimes they do push those boundaries because they don't have their peer relationships. They don't have their context to say, what about this person, and to sort of understand. So everybody, it's new for everybody. And there can be a temptation for teachers, I think, to be exceedingly rigid at the beginning of those years when they're in that boys' school environment. They feel they need to, hold to the rules and be very fixed in that perspective. But you also have to understand that you are building those relationships. And again, how we show up for them, every detail is being noticed. We are basically in front of them or beside them for most of the day, and they are taking in all of our clues, all of our body language, all of our tensions, our facial expressions, all of that. Boys are very, very good at that. Sometimes I don't think we give them enough credit for paying attention to the atmosphere in the classroom that the teachers generate, the tone, the culture, and they really, really do. I would also, I think it's important to mention that sometimes female teachers to an all-boys environment or leadership in all-boys schools benefit from an extra layer of planning and awareness as they embark upon how boys respond to them, and how, is particularly if they're in a leadership role. Sometimes boys are really nervous around new teachers, and particularly female teachers at times. They could show that in different ways, showing off, testing the limits, less clear of how to behave, even though for the adults in the space, it's perfectly clear to us that a teacher is a teacher is a teacher, and everybody should be given the same sort of level of respect, and everyone should be responded to similarly. Boys can also show up to be really quiet sometimes, and that can be perceived as being indifferent or not engaged. So I think it's really important for any teacher or new teacher to an all-boys environment to check in with those peers and colleagues that know the students well, that understand the cultural environment, and just sort of test the approach to see if it's in line with something the boys might already understand, and then determine how to find your own path forward. That's a journey of any teacher, but I think it's important for any new teacher to a boys' school to understand that.
Yeah, and I really like your point there, Sandy, about quiet boys. I mean, that's one that I think we need to be particularly wary of. I can think of a memorable occasion when we actually had Michael Reichert visit our school, and he was visiting classes, and I, of course, invited him to come and watch a class that I thought was very well established, was going really, really well, that I had good relationships in. And one of my, most powerful formative moments was speaking to Michael after that class, just about to congratulate myself on how well it had all gone, when he said to me, "I don't know if you realise this, Peter, but that boy, Michael is his name, he checked out. He was not connected with what you were doing. He was not connected with what was going on with other boys. I wonder whether you've noticed that." And in truth, I hadn't, and that was for me that first moment of thinking about boys where there is a relational disconnect, but because they are quiet and compliant, and because they generally do what we ask them to do, we just don't notice. And that's one that can fly under the radar if we're not careful.
That's such a valuable insight, Peter. And Sandy, when you were talking about teachers setting the tone, in class, I was reminded of a conversation I had with Mark Dowley from Brighton Grammar, who was talking about strategies for classroom management. And I said to him, some folk who feel that learning should be relational might be in opposition to this sort of rigid structure that you're possibly suggesting around around engagement in class. And he said, actually, the contrary is true. When we provide a safe framework and container in which boys can learn and do what they're meant to be doing in class, the relationship is an obvious sort of next step in integration of that. So, you know, I don't think those two things are in opposition with each other. And it's just great to hear you both talk about that. And also, as an erstwhile English teacher, I love the language that is used in the term relational gestures. And I think that highlights the importance of the fact that teachers need to demonstrate their expertise and take genuine interest in their students. What are some of the practical ways teachers can connect with boys on a personal level and really show that sense of care that we've been talking about?
To pick up on your thread there about erstwhile English teachers and possibly dramatists, Bruce, what I like about the name gesture there is also that you know, I think teaching is a performance craft. You know, building relationships is a performance craft. And so gestures resonates to me on that level as well, because what we're looking to do is to create connections, and sometimes we've got to be a bit creative with the way we do that, and that is a performance. It's a genuine heartfelt performance, but it is a performance. Look, and in terms, just to get onto the gestures themselves, I think at its core, it's about showing boys that we care, about them as people and as learners. So when we talk about relational learning, in my experience, it's really easy and tempting to drift more heavily into the relational than the learning component of that. The relationships are actually the vehicle for learning. So to put it a slightly different way, you know, there's little point in having a good, comfortable relationship with a boy if he's not actually learning anything, if he's not growing. And in recruitment interviews, I very often ask the question of teachers who are looking to take a role at the school I'm at, what is the most important thing a teacher does? I really love that question. The answers are generally really quite illuminating. And what I'm hoping for in that is that the concept of care figures prominently somewhere in the answer, and includes care for the person, also care about their learning outcomes. So that's the relational and the learning. And when we think about day-to-day, look, it's doing the little things well, making an effort to learn boys' names quickly at the start of a new year, greeting them at the door as they come into class, learning about their hobbies and interests, and then, of course, taking opportunity to check in. You know, I saw you in the play last week. You were outstanding as Hamlet. You know, how are your trombone lessons coming along? What do we think about the Eagles' chances on Sunday? All of those kind of incidental conversations that show them that we're interested and that we care. And the best relationships are built on those short, regular exchanges regarding what's happening in class, but of course also what's happening outside. And on that same theme, I think boys particularly appreciate it when we as teachers make a special effort. It might just be to attend a concert or a sporting fixture. And I can think of instances where that kind of simple gesture just completely changed the trajectory of a teacher-boy relationship. Boys really value that, and they notice it when we do it. And then, look, finally on this point for me, for now at least, I think the gestures identified in the original research done by Michael Reichert and Richard Hawley, they just offer simple practical strategies for teachers. And for those who might not be familiar with them, just a few of those are reaching out and improvising. We've touched on that already, to meet student needs. Demonstrating mastery in what we are teaching. This is hugely important to boys. They want to know that we know our stuff, that we're experts in our stuff, that we care about it. You know, the journey for a teacher to wanting to teach a subject at a high standard and teach it well is really interesting to boys. Boys are really interested in my case, you know, why mathematics? How did you come to teach that? Why do you care about this thing so much when maybe I don't, maybe others don't? It's that kind of thing. And look, Bruce, the last one I just want to touch on quickly, because I think it's hugely important and it's a challenging one, and that's the notion of vulnerability. So, you know, the research did reveal that one of those relational gestures is revealing a side of us that's vulnerable in the classroom. And this is, you know, perhaps not surprisingly, the gesture that is least used of all, but I think there's real power in it. And I think of it at least partly as this concept of reciprocity, you know, that boys see that we hold ourselves to the same standards that we ask of them. And really importantly, that when we get it wrong, we apologize. Saying sorry to a boy can be an incredibly powerful gesture. It's revealing vulnerability. It's revealing that we don't always get it right, but it's also revealing that we care enough to do that. And if we go back to what Sandra was saying at the beginning about, you know, the power differential between teacher and boy, and the teacher as the authority figure naturally, you know, sometimes all it takes is an apology to just break that down as a barrier for a positive relationship. And that can then just clear the path for things going forward.
I completely agree. I think that when we, in front of our students, allow that humility piece to say, you know what, I'm sorry, you're absolutely right. That, you know, that deadline needs to be changed, or I didn't understand what happened in class and I should have completely understood your perspective before I said anything, is just an example of that humility and humble quality that we allow them to see. And they are exceedingly generous, I think, really generous when that happens. And I think feel quite touched that we took the time to explain where we were thinking in our own minds at that time and share that, not only share that with them, but then say, listen, this is why it happened. And I get your perspective. I think that the gestures, I'm not formally a relational gesture, which to me is kind of a big hug, right? Regardless of the age of the student, when you're reaching out to them with a gesture, what you're really doing is saying you care. You're showing that you care through a variety of different ways, hence the different gestures that exist. Dr. Reichardt also did a white paper study with some of us who worked at the time anyway, exclusively in sort of primary junior aged boys. And a new gesture sort of emerged during that study that was presented at IBSC in Vancouver. And that was allowing boys asking them to be your helper. And I think as soon as I say that, people listening to the call will say, yes, I've done that. Or you realize something's a little bit wrong, either between a boy's distant or they're withdrawn or they're not participating at recess or at lunch hour. They seem a little aloof. They're not connecting with their friends. And you say, I need to do something about this. And you say to that student, and listen, could you find a couple of your friends? I really need your help to do whatever it happens to be. It could be, you know, setting up a positive space in the classroom. It could be, can you help me organize all the recess equipment? Can you help me figure out a fair way to have seating plans in the class or where we're going to sit at lunch? And you give the students the ability to you trust them to help you solve a problem that's an adult problem, regardless of how old the boy is. I think right away they sense that trust, and it's a great way to get those students who may not be engaged with you, who may not think that you see them as individuals, to say, wait a minute, she chose me to do something important. I guess I matter, and I get to choose my friends. And if that particular boy isn't maybe connecting as well with some friends, this gives that boy a chance to sort of build some community at a level that's okay because the teacher asked me to do it, which is, I think, a really important one. I've also, you know, I go to my, I have an upper school mentor group. And one thing that worked really well this year from a relational perspective, although that's not actually why I started it, was there was a big soccer game, football, but soccer for us in North America, and between a rival school, and it got a little chippy, it got a little name call-y at some point, and I wasn't able to be there at that event. And I said to my mentor group, what the heck happened? Like, what was going on there? How did it feel for you on the field or watching the game on the pitch? And they really appreciated the opportunity to give me the context of that situation, that I trusted them to tell me what happened from their perspective. Another thing that really works is, again, obviously that leadership thing within the school. Leadership's such a big thing in boys' schools, isn't it? You know, everyone wants their son to have leadership opportunities. And I think that actually being a great classroom leader is an important one. So when you're giving those boys a chance to have voice and choice in how the class goes, is it this book or that book or both books? Is it a paper, an essay, a project, or some combination of all of those? Do you do a seating plan? Our boys in a research project said they really appreciate when teachers have seating plans because it means class dynamics don't have a chance to take root, that the culture of the class can grow and thrive where dominant voices in a particular class can shift from subject to subject. And sometimes boys feel left out. So when they see a teacher actually creating a classroom environment with a seating plan, they feel really comforted that they don't have to take on that other social context in that period. Ultimately, I think it comes down to predictability and support. When teachers can provide, it's a kind of gesture, really, another unofficial one. But when we provide that culture of predictability and support for the students in the class, for our boys, then as a baseline, they feel that they all have the opportunity to be seen, heard, known, and loved by us.
This is the end of part one. We continue this fascinating conversation in part two of the Teacher-Boy Connection. In this first part, Sandy and Peter reminded us of the primacy of relationship in boys' educational journeys. And in the second part of this episode, we'll dive into the creation of positive classroom environments for boys. We'll learn about the key elements of school cultures that value and nurture learning relationships. And we close with advice from both Peter and Sandy for educators who are eager to connect better with the boys they teach. Part two is available immediately, so join us as we pick up where this conversation left off.